I'm John Kroll. If you ever have struggled to figure out why that error message keeps popping up on your computer screen, or if you just wanted to fling your laptop across the room because it won't do what you want it to, this is the No Limits for you. Or if you love the newest gadgets and want the lowdown on what the best technology out there right now is, this also is the show for you. We're going to answer your computer questions and come up with electronic gift ideas for the holidays today with our guests, Damon Richards of Port-to-Port Consulting, Regina Miller of Geek in Pink, and Chris Flood of WFYI's IT staff. And you. Please join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about electronic holiday gift ideas and computer questions. It is our technology show, and we're fortunate to have as our guests Damon Richards of Port-to-Port Consulting. Damon, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, John.
It's good to have you here.
Thanks.
Regina Miller of Geek in Pink. She is, in fact, in a pink shirt that does say Geek in Pink. Regina, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
And from elsewhere in the building here, Chris Flood with WFYI's IT staff. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You didn't have to come all that far for this, but it's good.
I just walked
in the
hallway.
Good. And I should say to all of our listeners here, particularly those of you who are as frightened of technology as I am your guy today. I have encouraged our panel to speak slowly and use small words so that I can understand all of this stuff. Please do not be afraid to call in with your questions. You can use the number 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We will keep asking until we understand is the way we will do this. So let me just start by saying, asking a sort of a general question right now. If you were going to get an electronic or a technological gift for someone this holiday season, what would you start with, Damon Richards?
Oh, it would depend a lot on who they are and how much I like them.
Okay.
But
say it's someone you really love here.
Someone I really love. Probably I would get them an iPad.
An iPad, why?
It's a very versatile device, and it is one of the few. I'm a big portable gadget geek.
Okay.
It's one of the few portable devices that I have found myself using more the longer I own it.
Okay, so there's no novelty that wears off
right.
with it. Regina, how about you? What would you do?
Well, I'd probably choose a tablet device, too, but I'd go with probably the Toshiba Thrive or the Asus e-Transformer, which is a competing product. It's Android-based rather than Apple. And the thing that I like about them is it does have the Android marketplace, but also they're a lot less expensive. So it depends, too. You know, to buy an expensive iPad for my five children would put a big dent in our budget, where if we were to do the Toshiba Thrive or one of the Android platforms, that would be pretty versatile and a lot less expensive.
What's the difference in the cost?
About $300.
Yeah,
about $300, depending on what. There's the 16 gig on the Toshiba Thrive. MSRP is $399. I'm starting to see it for sale for $299, but it's very versatile with its ports and all that.
Okay, Chris Flood, what would you get? Somebody.
Right now, I was picking a Leapfrog pad for my son.
Oh, very good.
You're hoping he's not listening right now, right?
Right.
Okay.
There's a lot of children's books on there, small reading apps, songs. It's a very good learning tool for toddler.
Okay.
And they can't get on the internet with it, so it's safe.
So it's safe. Well, and then I'm going to keep it with you, Chris, for a second, and we'll flip this equation around. Is there an electronic toy or gift out there that you would want? And you want your loved ones to be listening carefully here, right?
The Livio car kit for my smartphone.
Okay. And what is that and what does it do?
It's One of the things that it does, one, is a charger, which is the main thing, because the battery life on my smartphone is very short. The main function of it is that it will play the audio from your phone through your stereo speaker.
Right. So you go hands-free.
Yeah.
Oh, and just, okay.
And the added thing that it has is that it also will stream internet radio. So that's 40,000 stations you could play.
So you, anyone who has this could be listening to this in like Guam or wherever if
yes.
they were driving
yes.
around. That would be cool. Regina, how about you? What would you want?
Well, I'd like to mention that I don't have a Toshiba Thrive yet.
Okay.
So that would be good.
All right. And is that at the top of your wish list?
It is. It is. I keep bouncing back and forth between the ASUS E Transformer and the Toshiba Thrive. But yeah, one of those two would be nice.
Okay. And Damon, would you like?
I have recently rediscovered my love for running.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that my portable devices to measure that run just don't compare to the Garmin Forerunner 610. Anybody out there who loves me?
And what does that do?
It is a GPS watch that has a heart rate monitor, so it measures your distance, your speed, your heart rate. It calculates your calorie output. It tells you more about your run than you really want to know.
Oh, man. And how much, for people out there, how much does one of those normally run?
The Forerunner 610 runs about $350.
Okay. Well, that's the cost, really, though, of a very nice watch or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So we've already started getting some email questions, and I would invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. This one, I'm sure, is one. It is clearly holiday gift-giving centered. From a listener who says, so, a Kindle, a Nic, an iPad. Which do I want and why?
It really matters what they want to do with it.
Okay.
If this person just wants to read,
yeah,
I would say pick a Kindle. You can get the low-end Kindle now for less than $100.
Mm-hmm.
There are tens of thousands of books available. It's great. If you want to do something a little more, but mm-hmm. reading is your primary thing, then you're probably talking about the Nook.
Okay.
Probably not as many books available, but there are more applications that will run on the Nook.
Such as?
The Nook is a Android-based device, so there's lots of things in the Android market that you can do. I would also stick next to that Nook the Kindle Fire,
okay,
which is sort of the advanced version of the Kindle and costs a little bit more. The iPad will be the last choice if this is somebody who wants to do lots, and mm-hmm. they may not even be sure what they might want to do in the future.
And are the two, like, if suppose you make a switch, if you've bought a bunch of books on a Kindle, for example, and you get an iPad and you want to try to move your library over to that, is it possible to do that, or is that?
Yes, it is, because Amazon has written a Kindle reader for all these devices. So you can get a Kindle reader on your iPad to read Kindle books. You can't merge your libraries, though. If you have books that you bought at the Apple Store and books that you bought at Amazon, you can have them both on the same device, but you can't see them in one library.
Oh, together. Okay.
Right. And in our household, we have two Kindles and two Nooks. And mm-hmm. I would say between the two, I would get Kindles this time. I haven't played with the Kindle Fire yet. On the Nooks, though,
I have.
Have you? the Nooks, I have to say, there were some limitations once we got the device that I was quite surprised. For example, the 3G, which I believe the 3G version is no longer available, but the 3G was available. However, it was only for making purchases, so the apps and the App Store never did come fully to fruition mm-hmm. on the Nooks. So I have to say, if there was a way for me to take the Nooks back now and get the Kindle, I would have switched formats.
How about you, Chris? Which one do you favor? Chris Flood, WFYI.
Definitely the Kindle Fire. it's around $200.
It's about $200, yeah.
And it has access to mainly the top apps in the Google market.
Mm-hmm.
So if I just wanted to read a book,
and Kindle would be right. When you say top apps in terms of the Google app market. What are you talking about?
Like Pandora, I believe Netflix probably would Netflix be is an app that they would be able
Netflix
to use on it.
Netflix comes on it. and, of course, all the famous games. And there are tons of those.
So it sounds like the consensus is if you want to read or you are a reader, the Kindle is the most user-friendly.
Yes, right, and far less expensive.
Yeah, I mean, it's you're right. I think I've seen ads like about $80 or whatever,
right.
Somewhere around there. We've gotten another email question. Just says, how does one get rid of the Ask toolbar? It keeps popping up when I click on the Internet. It is not my homepage. What is the best way to keep my computer speed up? We've got two of those. Why don't we deal with the Ask toolbar first? Troubleshooting here. Chris Flood, how do you get rid of that one?
Probably first step would be going to Control Panel and uninstall the app. I mean, uninstall the program.
Right.
After that, as far as changing the homepage?
Well, why don't we start with it? It says it is not my homepage. When you talk about going to the Control Panel, what are you saying here? I'm trying to walk it through for people who are every bit as clueless about this.
We could give instructions that cause them to hurt themselves.
All right. Well, don't do that. But in some basic way, how do you do this? What is?
If the program is not corrupt, and depending on which operating system you have, if you go to the Start button and then go to Control Panel, Add Remove Programs, if it won't remove that way, then the application is corrupt or there's a likelihood of some other corruption on the machine that's interfering with the install or the uninstall process. If that doesn't work, Microsoft makes a clean uninstaller. It's an install cleanup tool, but it's a Microsoft tool that is pretty good about removing things that are stubborn. But once again, I'd start looking for other problems if you have things that are listed in Control Panel that when you go to uninstall them, they won't come off. That's usually an indication that there's some other problem going on. And importantly, too, when you are getting them, many people are getting those because when they do get Java updates, which are necessary, the Java updates and Flash and things like that, just be careful that the boxes they're pre-selected for you to go ahead and do those things.
Right.
So unselect those before you continue, and that will help protect you from getting those in the future.
Damon, any last words on how we solve this problem?
Well, I was just going to say, because I'm not familiar with the Ask toolbox and how it comes up. It is also possible that it's just a browser add-in.
Mm-hmm.
And so may not show up in Control Panel, but within the options for their internet browser, there may be a place to turn it off.
Okay, and then they're asking here, what is the best way to keep my computer speed up? Regina, I'll take it back to you. Regina Miller of Geek & Pink.
To keep your computer speed up, assuming you're starting with something healthy, once again, be sure that as you're installing things, be sure you don't have the things that are automatically selected. Deselect those things. Uninstall things that, for example, I see Kodak EasyShare a lot on people's computers on startup, and it's antiquated. The free version, they've long since stopped supporting, so go to Control Panel, remove that. Anything that you can keep from starting up when you boot the system is going to help your speed, and it's going to be less processes that are running when you're trying to use the machine. So that would be the simplest way to do it.
Right. And if it's an old machine, a really simple thing that sometimes makes a huge difference is just to defrag the hard drive, which on a Windows machine, there's a utility. If you right-click on the drive, go to Properties, there's an option to defrag the drive, and that what that does is it puts all the files together into a single place, so it speeds up how fast your machine can access stuff that's on your hard drive.
We are talking about computer questions and holiday electronic gift ideas here on No Limits today. We're fortunate to have as our guests Damon Richards of Port to Port Consulting, Regina Miller of Geek & Pink, Chris Flood, who is just from down the hall here, WFYI's IT staff. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about computer questions and electronic holiday gifts. With our guests, Damon Richards of Port to Port Consulting, Regina Miller of Geek and Pink, and Chris Flood with WFYI's IT staff. And not surprisingly, we're getting questions flooding in via email and the electronic stuff. This one comes from Keith, a listener here in Indianapolis. He says, how well do the Toshiba and iPads work with Skype or other web-based telecommunication programs? Damon, you are laughing, so I'm going to throw that one to you first. Richards of Port-to-Port Consulting.
A big part of does it work well or not is how well you're connected to the Internet. So a lot of times people say this doesn't work, and it's because they're on a bad Internet connection. The Skype tool for the iPad works really well. We've used it in business situations. People use it all the time for personal things. I have not used Skype on the Toshiba device, but on other Android devices, it's worked.
I saw the demo. Yeah, I did work on the demo there, and it was solid. It felt solid, like what the iTunes app did for it.
And when you talk about a bad Internet connection, define what a bad Internet connection, what makes an Internet connection bad?
Speed. Yeah. If you connections, if you have a DSL connection, for instance, your speed varies incredibly throughout the day, and so you may have times of the day when it works beautifully, and at other times when it doesn't. In my house, I have a cable connection, and I can tell when the school bus is going through my neighborhood because the kids get off the bus, they go right in the house to get on the internet, and my speed goes down.
Is that Regina Miller, the primary definition of a internet connection, whether it's good or bad?
Yes. One other thing that I've noticed a lot are people have their wireless, they have the connection set up, and if they have their connection set up and there's an unsecured one nearby, that their device might be gravitating towards that unsecured.
Yes.
So it's best to forget that one, go in there and mark it so it's not automatically connecting, because if you're on Skype and you're on solidly on your own home network and then that unsecured one pulls you away, then of course that's going to dump your connection. Mm-hmm. So you need to be established firmly to one connection.
We are talking about computer questions and holiday electronic gift ideas. Here on No Limits, you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, or you can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Yeah, I had a question about filling up a scratch disk on my computer and how to purge it. I do a fair amount of photo editing, and it seems like I'll clog up the scratch disk, if that's the right term, and it's asking me to delete files to free up more space, and so I'll delete some files on the computer, and eventually I'll get another alert that I need to clean out the scratch disk, and I didn't know if there's an easy way to do that without having to. It seems like I'm continually building it up and not only avoiding, you know, the temporarily of taking care of the problem as opposed to maintaining the computer.
Figuring it out. Good question. We'll try to get an answer for you. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Regina Miller, I'll throw that one to you first. I'm going to improvise and use the host prerogative and also ask kind of the idiot question because that's my job. What is a scratch disk?
Well, that's what I'm struggling with. I'm not familiar with that term. If there's temporary locations that need to be cleaned up, but I'm afraid I'm not familiar with the term, the scratch term on that. So
yeah, I'm not either, but my guess would be that it's the workspace for this photo editing app that he's using, and probably it isn't just that his scratch disk is full, but that the hard drive's full completely, and it's time to start looking at getting a bigger hard drive or uninstalling software you're not using and free up space. If you just clear a little bit, then it's not long before it's full again, and that's the process it sounds like Jeff's been going through.
Yeah, it'd probably be a good start to at least look at the percentage that he has in free space, and if he's below 15%, there's cause for concern. If he's getting below 15%, then it's critical that he gets a remedy in place.
And real quickly, somebody, Regina Miller or Damon Richards, explain to the listeners how you go determine how much free space you have. All right, Regina, we'll go with you.
If you go to, once again, depending on the operating system, and either in a Windows environment, it's either going to be My Computer or Computer, and go open those locations, go to the C drive, right-click Properties, and it will give you what your total space is and what your free space is. Mm-hmm. And it's I like to see it above 30% free space. 15% is becoming critical. If you're below 15%, it's imperative. I've seen some as low as 2%, and that's an imminent crash.
I've been there.
So I think when people get into photo editing and video editing in particular, it consumes space far
Those
faster than what they realize.
A lot of space.
Particularly because they hold multiple levels of undo. So as you make changes, it's really making copies of that image so you can go back again.
And, should you, as a practice, delete all of that stuff when you're done if you want to keep the space free or what?
I would say,
Chris Flood, yes.
I would say backing up your old files would be the best thing so you at least have them.
Right.
An external hard drive or a SD card to just, or some type of cloud storage to put whatever work.
Yeah, we've got a question from a listener here that's actually right on this point. An email question says, "Are flash drives safe for backing up data? How long do they last, and do you need to occasionally reformat them?" So clearly, there are a lot of people out there who are confronting this challenge.
I would not.
Damon Richards, yes.
I would not put things that are truly critical on a flash drive as my only backup. For routine backups of things, sure, I carry a flash drive around with me that carries all the stuff I'm working on right now. Mm-hmm. But I would not count that as here's my solid backup, because I've had my flash drives go through the washer and dryer, and they don't like that.
Oh, is that the primary issue, is because they're portable and you could leave them in the pockets or is there a technological problem?
Yeah, and since we're a repair shop, we also see that they're plugged in the front and a five-year-old comes by and bumps into them and it's broken off. Well, you actually have to cannibalize another one just like that and hope that you can get the circuit board in there to recover the information. But the rewrite on those is also, I think, about 1,000 times, which is a lot. But once again, it's dynamic. So anytime you do something, there's the possibility that it's going to be overwritten. And another thing on that is when I'm finding a lot with students that they will use Word maybe on their parents' computer and they'll be saving it directly to the flash drive rather than to the local drive. Well, Word and those programs have an autosave on there. So if they pluck that out of the drive in the wrong sequence, it's not there. The autosave, they've lost the program. It's an autosave, and the autosave's in limbo. It's not actually saved on the local drive. So that can actually freeze up the drive, too. So, and that's kind of off on a tangent. But, yeah, for backup, it's good temporary backup, but not to archive.
Yeah, I would recommend.
So how should you archive or back stuff up, then? What would the argument be for doing that? Where's the best solution?
Well, we're in transition to the best solution.
Okay.
If you'd asked a year ago, the best solution probably would have been a external USB drive, which is just another hard drive that plugs into the machine. But now there are so many cloud-based backup services that are relatively inexpensive, if not free, that picking one of those might make just as much sense.
And where do you think this is going to go? You say we're in transition.
It's going to all go online.
Okay. Where you back stuff up. Does that present some security risks, though, that your information, would you not want to back up, say, your private financial data or something like that online?
Most of the backup services use encryption, so your data gets backed up, gets encrypted before it leaves your machine, and it stays encrypted out there, and it doesn't get decrypted unless you bring it back to your machine. So unless you've got, government secrets, I wouldn't be too worried.
Okay, Regina.
My personal files are out there.
Okay, Regina Miller.
Once again, with having this many children and the fact that we accidentally recorded over the first 4 months of our triplets' lives, I'm a little bit nuts about backups. So we actually keep a static copy on a DVD that I also give to grandparents as Christmas presents, so they're at somebody else's house, that God forbid if my house burns down that there's copies elsewhere. But I like online services like, Carbonite is good. But it does have to stay on your local drive, so you don't want to use that to back things up and take it off your hard drive, because it's only what's on your drive. If you use something like an Amazon locker, it can be on that storage locker without still staying on your hard drive, too. So it kind of depends on whether or not the goal is to keep it on your machine in addition to it being backed up, or if it's to free up the space to be elsewhere. But I'm a little bit nuts and do have mine on dual-layer DVDs in a safe also.
We are talking about computer questions and electronic holiday gift ideas here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, which a lot of people are doing. I've got a raft of them I have to get through here. Or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We had another question was similar to this. It says, I am having trouble with my laptop. It seems to have trouble reading flash drives in certain USB slots. Seems to read and save to a portable hard drive without problems, but the flash drives get kicked out sometimes. I have checked the flash drives for viruses and have not found any. This is a Vista operating system. Any suggestions? Everyone is sort of avoiding eye contact at the moment. Chris Flood, you've been silent for a couple of minutes. We'll march you into the cannon's mouth first. Any suggestions?
As far as
how to work with the flash drives? Yeah, that doesn't seem to be reading in certain USB, and they don't have viruses. Says it's a Vista operating system. Any thoughts?
Do you want to go ahead,
Chris? Yeah.
Maybe it would just be changing ports, just figure out which one it was.
Right.
Seeing if maybe I need to update the drivers for my USB controller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing that happens frequently with USB devices is you can plug a device into one port and it doesn't work, but you move it to a different port and it does. That's because in the process of installing a driver, something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. So if this person has, it won't work in the first port, but it always works in the second port, I just say use the second port and don't worry about it.
Right, and I'd even say try the back ports. I find the back ports more reliable that are actually not, the front ports are usually a media card. They're actually just tied into the motherboard where the back ports are integrated to the motherboard. So switching to the back ports, I find does resolve that a lot.
Does it ever occur to you folks that you speak in a foreign language? Motherboard and all of that. I'm sorry.
I try really hard not to, John. I try to talk to people about their computers the way I want my mechanic to talk to me about my car.
Yeah.
Because everything on my car is a thingy of some sort.
Okay. And that's sort of the way, you know, I approach all of this. We've gotten a question from, and I hope I'm going to pronounce the name right, from Jimmy Darwala, I think. And he says, I'm wondering what the best computer security program out there is. There's McAfee, Norton, Webroot, and many others out there. Which one will protect my computer best from viruses and malware? Regina Miller.
You really have to balance your risk level with your convenience level. There are things that we can put on there that I guarantee you won't get infected, and you also won't be able to go any place that you want to go. So it really is a balance. I will say that the antivirus, the virus definitions from many of the major ones, I have found the success rate to be comparable even between AVG Free, Norton, McAfee. Some of the bigger name ones I don't like because you get a whole lot of extra components that bog down your resources for very little, if any, extra protection. Mm-hmm. So that's, yes, you can't be protected completely, so much so that you won't be able to go any place.
Yeah, won't even be able to access the internet. It's sort of like a metaphor for life,
right?
You know, in that way. Well, which ones do you use personally? I mean, Damon Richards.
We have used several. I recommend a lot to family and friends just to use the AVG Free program because it's free. We have stopped using the Norton Internet Security Suites because it has become so bloated that it really gets in the way. It slows things down. McAfee makes a good product. Kaspersky's product is probably one of the faster ones. But any of the major name brand antivirus programs will work pretty much comparably. The issues become what else do they give you and how easy is it to turn some of that stuff off that gets in the way.
Chris Flood, which one do you use?
Right now I use Avast, which is a free program for about the first 6 months, but you can constantly reinstall it over and over again. I like that particularly because once when you've installed it, it wants you to reboot and it'll do a scan of your machine before it starts up. That, and I also use Malwarebytes for any type of malware infection. That And that's about all
and
I use.
Somebody, again, this is me encouraging the panel to speak slowly and use small words. Could you explain the difference between a virus and malware? so that we get this. I mean, we get all of these warnings. And
from the standpoint of a person who owns a computer, there's no difference.
Right.
Okay.
There are technical details that say whether it's a virus or a Trojan or malware or any of those other words, but all of them are bad programs you don't want.
Okay. And is there any distinction that you notice in the way it operates or anything like that, Regina Miller?
I would say on the antivirus, as equally important as the antivirus, having something that's active and the virus definitions are updated properly is user education. Because what happens a lot of time is things are adequately protecting you, and then you get a link that you get an email that just has a single link from mm-hmm, someone that you know. Mm-hmm. You follow that link, and your antivirus sees that the user actually intervened and said, "I want to do this." Much
right.
in the same way, if you were installing software or printer, and you get the pop up that says, "Yes, do you want to continue?" Well, your antivirus reads that as user clicked OK, so it lets
exactly.
it through. So a lot of times, and what I find is usually the case, is the antivirus was adequate, but the user unintentionally did something to let it through. So
it's a good piece
Damon
of advice
Richards,
that
please.
Just because there's an OK button doesn't mean you have to click it.
Okay. So you are supposed to exercise some discretion. The machine won't always protect you from yourself.
Correct.
We are talking about computer questions and electronic holiday gift ideas here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We have an email question from Carol Simonetti, who says, if you want to purchase an iPad, how do you decide how much memory you need as the cost goes up significantly? Damon Richards just about guffawed when I asked the question here. So, Damon, we'll let you start first. What should you decide, or how should you go about asking that question and determining how much memory you need?
If you want to carry around a lot of movies, then you need the bigger ones.
Mm-hmm.
But pretty much for the typical user, the 16-gig iPad is going to have enough memory for you to do all the things you want to do.
And if you do want to carry around a lot of movies,
well,
how much do
you move up to 32 or 64? I remember standing in line to get an mm-hmm. iPhone, one of the early mobs, mm-hmm. and having a teenage kid in front of me become distraught because he couldn't get the one with 16 gig on it because he wanted to carry around every Star Trek movie that had ever been made.
That's a lot of movies. Right.
Yes.
There.
So it really, the routine day-to-day stuff, my iPad is a 16-gig iPad, and it's nowhere close to full. And I have lots of pictures. I have a few videos. I even have a couple movies.
Mm-hmm. But by and large, if you're going to use it for normal practice and it's not going to be sort of a portable theater for you where you've
right.
got the entire Library of Congress in there and all of their movies, you'll be fine.
And the rate of consumption on the movies is, what, about a third to a half gig per movie? So I think that's the last compression that I saw
yeah,
on it that it was taking about
gig.
It. So, you know, if you're looking at a half a gig, and
you've got about room for about 30 movies then. If
right, and nothing else.
And nothing
right.
else. So, okay, so the math is easy there if you want to carry a lot of those around. We are talking about computers and electronic holiday gift ideas here on No Limits with our guests, Damon Richards of Port-to-Port Consulting, Regina Miller of Geek & Pink, and Chris Flood from just down the hall here at WFYI. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are answering computer questions today and coming up with electronic holiday gift ideas, although the focus in most of the calls and emails have been about computer problems rather than gaining electronic holiday gift ideas. You can join the program by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can Facebook or tweet a question. I didn't know those were verbs, but we'll do it that way. Facebook or tweet a question to us at WFYI. We've gotten an email question from a listener named David Bacon, who says, many inexpensive iPad clones that claim to be more than just an e-reader in the $100 to $150 range, run the Android system and say they can run apps, have rechargeable batteries, built-in Wi-Fi, sound and speakers for MP3, touch screens and say they can play video and movies. And you guys insist this is not a foreign language. What kind of operability can one expect, or what kind of trouble problems can one expect from these? Regina Miller.
I have a lot of experience in this one right now. there are good ones in that price range. I would say even the $100 to $150 price range, the main question that you'd want to know when you're looking into these is the version of Android that it's running. Can it access the App Store? Can the Android App Store? So if it can, the marketplace, Android marketplace. So if it can do that, then it that would be the first question. And then the second question is the operating system on it upgradable? Some are, some are not. Mm-hmm. I just bought an Arcos that was a good price. Got it home, felt good, but it could not access the marketplace, so it promptly went back. Conversely, I got one at Fry's that was $100, gets on the marketplace and has extra ports. All that and is doing wonderfully for what we need it for, which is basically just an internet appliance to be mobile about the house, not so much to and out and about the world, but not so much to be running apps and business applications, right, but for entertainment purposes instead.
Damon Richards.
A big piece of the answer to that question is, why are you buying it? Mm-hmm. The basic devices are going to perform the basic functions. But there are issues like, will it be around? Will that manufacturer be around? Because this game's going to go on, and there are going to be winners and losers. We've even seen some major players lose, like the HP touchpad. Mm-hmm. So you got to think about that as well when making a decision about where you're going to buy. It isn't just a cost decision.
We are talking about computer problems and electronic holiday gift ideas here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Angela, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
And your question, please.
Yes, my question is, I was thinking about getting an e-reader, but I was also trying to determine whether I should just get a tablet computer as well. Can a tablet computer, will it work as an e-reader, including also store my Office Suite products and give me the ability to Photoshop my pictures?
Good question. Thank you, Angela. Well, Damon Richards, what do you think? Will it do all of that?
In a word, yes.
Okay.
But maybe not as easy as Angela would like for it to. Certainly, you can use your tablet as an e-reader. We said earlier that the Kindle software is available for all the different platforms. The Nook software is available on several platforms. So, yes, you could use it as an e-reader. You can store documents on it, and you can get software, not Microsoft software, but other software that will edit your Office documents. Photo editing gets a bit harder. It's doable, but you don't have the processing power to do high-end. If you're talking about cropping and taking out pink eye, yeah, you can do that. But you start to push yourself into it, maybe it's time to look at getting a real computer.
Mm-hmm. And we've gotten an email question here from a listener named Rita. Says, do any of these devices have voice operation without installing Dragon for someone who cannot use his or her hands? And I'll throw that one to Chris Flood first. You're looking puzzled, so I'm guessing that the answer may not be yes.
As far as some functions, right, yeah, there are a lot of things you could do with, like, for on the Android, the Google Voice, you can, there's commands like for navigation, for opening a for looking up something on the web, but as far as point and click to a specific app, you might right, run into some issues.
Well, let me reframe the question in here a little bit. Which of the devices are most friendly to disabled users, people who don't have full use of their hands? Regina Miller, any ideas?
I guess it would depend on how limited the use of hands are. For example, the power times out quickly. So if you had very limited use, it'd be hard to keep the power on because they are so energy efficient, and going on standby, it would be hard to do that. I use Dragon. I used it on the 3GS. Now with the 4S, it has it built in for speech recognition, and I assume that there's something comparable with the iPad built into it. There's not.
Not yet.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So, no, I will say that the one that works on the 4S, I'm really impressed with.
That's Siri.
Damon Richards.
That's right,
yeah.
Siri. Yes. Yes, I love Siri. But I think all the other ones, it would take an add-in. Dragon, naturally speaking, is a good one, and it's actually not very expensive as an app. It's not nearly as expensive as what it is as a standalone on a computer. So that app is good, but it does take some training and some working with it to get it to do what you want it to.
We are talking about computers and troubles with computers by and large. Electronic holiday gift ideas here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email, nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can Facebook or tweet us at WFYI. Jill, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. Your question.
My question is actually about Nintendo DS, the portable the handheld system from Nintendo. My son wants to get one for Christmas, but I know that the newest version out is a 3D version, and I've heard some not so great reviews just as far as it hurting people's eyes, making them kind of sick to their stomach because it's 3D. So I wasn't quite sure I wanted to go with that. Plus, it's expensive, obviously. But the version that was right before that seems like the kind of version that I want, but they're not on sale at all, usually, and I don't know if it's worth it. So I'm trying to decide between those two. And I've also looked online, and there are a lot of refurbished ones, and I was looking basically for your advice, too, on is it worth trying to get a refurbished Nintendo DS, or is it too risky because I'm imagining that they get dropped quite a bit.
Good question. Thank you for the call, Jill. Okay, Regina Miller, Nintendo DS, the 3D.
The 3D, I don't have experience with. The DSi, we do have one in our household. I would say on buying a used one, as long as you have the opportunity to make sure it works, usually on those devices, they either work or they don't work. So mm-hmm. you're going to get it DOA, or you're going to get it dead on arrival, or it's going to power on and function until it no longer functions. We have a 12-year-old that she's wanting to sell hers right now, for example, just because she's outgrown it and she wants to move on to other technology. So when we've looked at them, it seems like the used DSis are selling for about $100, and in many cases it truly is just because the children have grown out of them and want to move on to something else. So if you're going to do it on someplace like eBay, then just look for good feedback on the people and take advantage of the buyer protection plan that they have on eBay. GameStop and Best Buy also have used ones through certain avenues that have a warranty on them, but you also pay a premium for that security.
Well, let me broaden this question a little bit. At what point, because obviously the technological advances are in a revolutionary stage right now, where one generation seems to follow about 20 seconds after the last one. How do you answer the question of, you know, should I just attempt to upgrade what I've got or buy new or whatever? What are some of the guideposts you should use in asking that question and attempting to answer it? Damon Richards.
Well, I think a big piece of that is just what does this device do for your ego?
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of older devices that will perform perfectly for a lot of people's needs.
Okay.
But if you ask me, would I like to buy a refurbished iPhone? No. I want a new one because it's cooler than the old one. So that plays into it. Is not just what's the deal, but also what will it say to the people around me?
Yeah, well, and are there reasons other than self-affirmation to do that, Regina Miller, would you say?
I would say, for example, I'm really rough on iPhones. The last one, I went through 5 in my contract period, and I would have been perfectly content. I would have been perfectly content getting the same model, but however, on this newest release, it has a defining feature that I cannot get on the other one, which would be Siri. Mm-hmm. So that feature makes it worth doing the latest and the greatest. Now, if it were on the verge of another one coming out, I would still probably just go with this one that has the feature that I need. But up until this one came out, the last roundabout was ample for me. Like even with the DSi, the 3D has the 3D has no interest to me. My daughters haven't expressed an interest in that. So all the other features that were in the other one, I would say that the DSi is better than the previous one or the regular DS. But there comes a point in the features that they're just superfluous and not wanted, not necessarily needed by the users.
Chris Flood, when do you make the decision here at FYI that something's got to go, or whether you just drive how well the last pledge drive did, basically?
Usually cost is the main deciding factor. Yeah. Back to the 3DS, the 3D part of that is pretty gimmicky, but if you need a newer DS, if your old one is broken or you don't have one, I would say go ahead because the DSs are backwards compatible with older games. Mm-hmm. But as far as for the 3D part of it, it's pretty gimmicky. You have really small viewing angle to see the 3D on it. If you can get a, what was it,
The DSi.
I'm back to the DS, Lite version. But if you could get one and it's refurbished and you have a warranty, I would say go ahead and get one of those.
Okay. We are talking about computer and technology here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hello, yeah. This is Joe. I'm in Indianapolis. I have a question for you that maybe I hate to steer the conversation in a totally different direction. Most of the questions have been kind of like consumer electronics questions, stuff at home. And I'm somebody who works and has worked for a few years in electronics.
Yeah.
And am finding that, like you've just said, things move faster than you can really keep up with. And my question is about continuing education for people, especially in this economy and the way that the job situation is. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who would be curious what your panel does to stay up to date with technology. Like, is there a school that you prefer? Are there courses that that you think people should know about?
Joe, we will take that up. We're getting a little tight on time, so thank you for the question. Appreciate it. Well, what do we do for continuing education? Regina Miller, how do you stay current on this stuff since it is changing every 10 seconds?
I learn it as I need to know it or as something sparks my interest and just play with it hands-on until I've got it down pat.
Oh, so it's sort of learning by doing. You go and fiddle around with something and try to figure it out. Damon Richards, how about you?
We have a combination of things. At Port-to-Port, we have structured training initiatives for our staff. You must learn these things and get these certifications. And there are resources, some web-based, some book-based, and some classroom. We find that classroom learning is probably the hardest way to learn this stuff because it's like Regina said, you have to play with it. And so we spend a great chunk of our time playing with these things and seeing what they do and don't do and how they might be used. I would venture that a good 20% of my week is spent just playing with new stuff.
And Chris Flood, real quickly, how do you stay current here?
Stay current, one, like Damon has said, training. The other thing is pretty much, I'm repeating what you guys said. If you run across those particular items, like for instance, the gadgets we had talked about using USB drives, it comes across whenever those things come into use around here, that's when you end up playing with it and learning all about it.
Jane, welcome to the program. We've got just about a moment left, so if you could ask your question quickly.
Okay, and I hope this hasn't been asked before. I missed just a few minutes. I'm interested in the cross internet TVs. I mean, TVs that you can watch your shows on. You can also cruise, surf the internet and all that. I was interested in if there was a particular brand, model, anything that somebody recommended for that, since we're going to be getting a new TV anyway. I don't know that much about them.
Okay, well, we will take that up and see if we can get an answer for you. Thank you very much for the call. So, TVs that are internet compatible, I guess. I don't even know the terminology anymore.
I'd recommend Vizio. We have a Vizio, and they're constantly updating their widgets, which is how it interacts with applications on there that interact with the internet. So, for example, when we first got it, there was Netflix available, but now there's Hulu Plus available. Now there's Amazon available on there. The Vizio, we've had ours for a year. We've had good luck with it so far. The reviews are good. The price is great. And like I said, they are constantly updating their widgets, so you can interact with more internet television all the time.
Do people actually get paid to come up with names like widgets?
Yes. Okay. Actually, they do. Yes.
All right. But Damon Richards, real quickly, which one would you recommend?
I think the Vizio is a good suggestion. What's going to happen is this is going to be the kind of question of, like, I want to buy a TV without a remote control. All TVs are going to be internet aware in a very short order. So if you got to buy one now, you pick from what's available. Vizio is readily available. Lots of people have them, so you're not alone. But it won't be long before every TV will be internet
aware. And are you running the risk then of sort of buying in the first wave of that technology? So you're absorbing most of the R&D costs.
You know, they've come down so much in price.
Yeah, you're past the first wave.
Okay.
Right. Like ours that we got, it's a decent size, and it was about $300. So it's not like the very first big screen that we got that was $2,000. So for $300, I'm willing to, you know, use it for a couple of years or until it dies, and then we'll move on to the next wave. So. Mm-hmm.
We have been talking today about computers and electronic holiday gift ideas, and I will say as we get ready to wrap up here that I hope you all get your Christmas wishes and that your stockings are stuffed. I've been fortunate to have as my guest Damon Richards of Port to Port Consulting. Damon, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
You're welcome, John.
Regina Miller of Geek and Pink. Regina, I've enjoyed talking with you too.
Thank you very much.
And Chris Flood of our very own WFYI family. Thank you very much for joining us today. I'd also like to thank all of our listeners and apologize to those of you whose email questions or calls I was not able to get to. We will try to do this subject again in the future. No doubt I will be every bit as poorly educated at that point. Next week, we're going to talk about how not-for-profits struggle in a prolonged economic slump. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us. Talk with you next week.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alsip. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.